She's in a mood tonight. Hello.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the probably the most bitchiest episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, which streams live on digital stream radio every Monday night at 6:30 p.m. You can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Joining us on today's show is Cooper Beckett of Life on the Swing Set, a podcast that explores swinging and non-monogamy. He's also a published author. We're super excited to have him on the show today. Or is it monogamy? Non-monogamy, right?
Non-monogamy, yeah.
Yeah, I said that, right?
Yeah.
But you said it in cursive.
Yeah.
Did I? Oh, well, let me try that again. It is a podcast that explores swinging and non-monogamy.
I kind of felt like you were walking through mud on that opener there.
My name is Tom, and I am your host, and is with me, starting with the first bitchy one, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And the sweet and ever so delicious.
Good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to The Dish. Oh, it's going to be one hell of a bitchy show. Trish is in a mood. I think she's got her period.
She's super nasty.
She is.
But we love you, though.
I love you guys, too. I don't know what happened.
Just remember that, you know, we love you no matter what. No matter why. But anyway.
Oh, it's unconditional love.
No, with me, it's conditional.
I can't. So we've got so much to talk about. We've got a guest, as we mentioned on the show. We're super excited to have Cooper with us. But before we move forward, as we always do, we want to discuss a nice, delicious cocktail that we're going to suggest for you. And to do that, we're going to throw it over to Christopher.
That is I. All right. Today's suggested cocktail, we're not going to lie, we're not drinking this one. But it makes sense when we talk about what we did for the weekend, why I chose this cocktail. And today's cocktail is the Kentucky Waterfall.
What did you do this weekend? Well, anyway, we'll get to that later.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. So the Kentucky Waterfall consists of 2 ounces of bourbon whiskey, 1 tablespoon of Campari bitters, Campari being a grapefruit liqueur, very bitter, 1/2 ounce sake, Tom's favorite, 1.5 ounces pineapple juice, and 1 ounce strawberry syrup. Add all the ingredients to a cocktail shaker with ice, shake, and strain into a rocks glass filled with fresh ice, garnished with an orange peel, and that is a cocktail courtesy of drinksmixer.com.
Joking aside, that sounds freaking delicious.
I want to try that.
Except for the sake. What are you making it?
I want to make that as is. That sounds really good. You wouldn't even taste the sake in there.
Yeah, very little for me. Treat it like I do, like I treat gin.
Lots of it. Lots and lots of gin.
No, not at all.
So that's our cocktail for the day.
Suggested cocktail. We're actually having, because I love them so much and Trish makes them so well, we're having a vodka gimlet again.
I love them so much more with gin, though. A gin gimlet is just...
Well, I mean, hey, for you, go for it. You knock your socks off. I thought there was some gin in there somewhere.
What?
I don't know. But, you know, Trish loves vodka, right, Trish?
Yes.
And vodka's good. Yeah. All right. So anyway, so let's see. What happened this weekend? I was off today from work. So now my summer is officially started. I get every Monday off from my normal job. Obviously, I schedule vacation time for that. But I take every Monday off from now until September. So I have plenty of time to do things over the long weekends that I have. And it's fun. So this weekend, let's see, Friday, I stayed home. I sort of kind of just watch Game of Thrones. I'm jonesing the return of Game of Thrones so bad that I started from season 1 and I'm working up my way up through the seasons. I'm already on season 3. The episode that I'm currently watching is The Reigns of Kashmir, or the one where, you know, all hell just breaks loose and every Stark except Arya and Bran. And Jon Snow obviously dies. So
no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
It's Game of Thrones, and you don't watch it, so you don't have to worry about it. That's all you need to know. But either way, it's a great show, and I can't wait for the final season. It's coming next year, and I am on a binge yet again for the third time. And aside from that, I worked Saturday. I worked Sunday at the bar. It was a very, very an interesting weekend. It was actually very relaxing for me, and it was raining, so I was able to actually just stay home and relax. So, Nick, what did you do this weekend?
Nothing really.
You got some pool time and all that good stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
Want to talk about it?
No.
Yes, you do.
Why?
Because it was fun.
Fine.
So tell us about your weekend.
My friend came down from New York, surprised me, and then we hung out on the beach in West Haven. I drank, I ate, I slept. And then the next day, I went to the pool at this guy's house that I'm kind of seeing. I don't know, it's kind of complicated. I don't really understand what's going on.
Buckle up, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We're going for a ride. No seatbelts.
And I drank by the pool. We ate. And then I went to work. And then I died at work this morning. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah, last night was very interesting, to say the least.
It was fun, yeah.
It was a good night.
Mm-hmm. I've learned a lot about women and squirting over the past couple of days.
Jesus.
It's a thing.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
No. I know what it is, but I didn't expect that to be.
I sort of kind of want to find out.
Did you know that women could teach themselves how to squirt?
Squirt what?
It's like, you know, they're fluid.
Your vagina?
This is a gross conversation. This is a gay show.
You mentioned it. Well, it's
we
a gay show. We
listeners.
Have lady listeners.
Oh, and I also learned what caspering means.
What the hell?
All right, so let's finish up with lady juices first. So women can actually squirt, but squirt what? Like their...
It's like a natural lubricant that women can excrete. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like a super soaker?
I mean, in some cases, yeah.
I'm disappointed in myself for saying that. I'm sorry.
I can't.
He right. literally just put his hand on his chest. I'm sorry.
Too far, Chris.
So we know that women can squirt.
Yeah.
I can't.
I'm actually in conversation with these women. We were talking about maybe producing a podcast. So we'll see what goes on with that.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Sex and squirtin'.
All right. Well,
women everywhere will love it.
You heard it here first. So your other thing is
caspering.
Caspering. Tell us about caspering.
So, if you don't know what ghosting is, which if you're in the gay community, I'm sure you know what ghosting is.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you just kind of high and dry somebody. So this guy that I'm currently hanging out with, spending time with, back in the day we hung out a couple times and I ghosted, or that's the way he would like to put it. But now they're all calling me Casper, him and all of his friends.
Oh.
Because caspering is actually a friendly way of ghosting. It's like you send them one last text message explaining that they're a great person, but you're just not into it. And then you disappear
so
and don't respond.
So you're the friendly ghost.
Yeah, so they keep calling me caspering, and I keep sending gifts to them with, like, Casper, like, going completely clear. You know what I mean? the guy that I'm talking to, he was talking to me about something, and he said something nasty, so of course I'm going to be a comeback. And, I said the C word.
You did say the C
you
word.
You did.
There's this one gif of...
You're worried about that when we're talking about squirting.
I know. There's this one gif of Casper reaching for... What's the girl's name in the movie? I can't remember the name.
I know the actress was Christina Ricci.
Right, so he's reaching for her, and their hands just kind of... Her hand goes right through his hand and he goes clear. And I'm like, I just said that to him.
You're a mess.
Nasty.
It's fine.
So we've learned about two very important things. Women squirt and they can squirt on purpose. Is that what it was? Or intentionally?
They can train themselves
yes.
to do so.
Okay. And then we learned about caspering, which mm-hmm. Nick evidently does very well. So Christopher, why don't we shoot it over your way? Tell us what you did this weekend. Meh.
Yeah. No, it was a lot cleaner than that. But no, it was Mama's birthday.
Ah.
It was Liz's birthday on Friday. So after work Friday, I just hung out at home. And then Saturday, we went to literally, she was like, what's the furthest place in Connecticut I can pick to go have a birthday party? Oh, perfect. It was like on the New York, Massachusetts border, pretty much up in Canaan, Kent area.
So you were close to like the, what do they call those over there? The Berkshires?
No.
No.
About an hour and a half from there.
Okay. Well, it's the corner of Connecticut towards New York.
Yeah, because it was near Goshen. So that's Goshen's like 40 minutes from
so
Pittsfield.
About an hour.
Yeah, close, you know,
okay,
40
well, so
minutes.
So it's not
so.
Too far.
Yeah,
but
not
bad. Up
what
in
the
that
fuck
direction.
Are we talking about?
Anyway, so I went there. This Chris's is the reason weekend. That I picked. This is the reason why I picked the waterfall cocktail, because I believe the town was called Falls River or something like that. Mm. And we went, there was a group of us, my friend Caroline and I drove up, had a little adventure ourselves. And it's this really cool park. You kind of, you know, hike through the woods and there are these waterfalls. You can do cliff diving. You can jump off like the rocks and, you know, sit under waterfalls and you can float out in rapids. There's some light rapids. And it was kind of nice. We were all just like blew up little floaties and plopped chairs and where it was shallow enough to like where you're, you know, your tits were just in the water.
Ah, nice.
You were sitting and we just kind of hung out in the water for a couple hours.
You said tits and I started rubbing my chest.
Yes, you did indeed.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it was very relaxing. It was very nice. It was very nice.
I wish I could have gone. I would love to sit under a waterfall, although I may reroute the whole water system, but, you know, sure.
I wasn't about climbing rocks and jumping off things because I'm currently uninsured, so I'm not about doing things that I might hurt myself. But the water was very clean, but if you were like, those who were sliding up against the rocks were pulling little leeches off their body. Like,
stop.
Not kidding. Like, my friend, we were riding on the tubes and went through a couple rapids, and she had kind of got tossed against some rocks, and she felt itchy, and she's like putting her hands in her crotch and pulling little leeches off their back and everything.
That's disgusting.
Oh, I would have.
They live on the rocks. Like, they weren't like, you know, big ass bloodsuckers like that guy from Speed 2 puts on his body. They were little things, but I was leech free, and it was
Well, of course you were.
Indeed.
You know,
with the exception of your boyfriend.
Speaking of leech, a while back we did a lychee martini?
Lychee martini.
One of our listeners actually said that he would like us to feature that cocktail on the show again and do it because he sent a recipe that he would like for us to try.
I'm down. I fucking love lychee.
So we'll definitely have to do that again at some point.
Surely.
Yeah. I forgot about that, but it's good to mention.
Noted.
It's important. Yes. All right, well, weekends are done. I believe we can move on to some stories. But before we do, so last week we had Adrian and Clay, right, on the show, and we talked about...
Oh, yeah, great news!
Absolutely. We talked about, you know, their hard work in being able to find some sort of way in where Clay could be in Romania and become a resident of Romania because he's married to Adrian, who is a native of Romania. And so all that fighting and everything went all the way up to the court at the European Union. And they were asked to, in essence, describe what partnership meant.
Spouse.
And so the description that the court gave came back and said that, you know, the word spouse also includes same-sex couples. And as a result of that, a lot changed for people, for members of the LGBT community all over the European Union. However, one decision needed to be made, and that was the one made in Romania at the Constitutional Court of Romania. And that decision, we recorded on Monday, and that decision was going to be rendered on Wednesday. And the decision came back, and it was a very positive decision because now the Constitutional Court of Romania says that, yes, the word spouse includes same-sex couples, and that now it is legal for spouses to bring their spouses to Romania and have them be recognized as residents and be able to live and work and do everything that, you know, couples want to do together in life.
And if someone's... Correct me if I'm wrong. If someone gets married in the European Union and they go to other nations in the European Union, they have to recognize them as spouses, correct?
I'm sure that that's probably the case. This particular ruling in Romania speaks to what Romania is going to do going forward.
But Romania at the moment has not legalized marriage or same-sex marriage.
No, it is not legal to perform same-sex marriage.
But they have to recognize it.
Correct, because of their union.
Yeah, that's because of the European Union.
Yeah, so I'm sure that, you know, it has to...
Because they were married in Belgium.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. So we're super happy for them. Congratulations to them both on that amazing victory. And we're wishing them well and wishing everyone of our brothers and sisters over in the European Union a big congrats. So, all right. So we can move on to some stories. I'll kick it off just to give some contextualization of what I'm about to talk about. There had been a lot of Pride celebrations all over the world that occurred. Obviously, the month of June is very big for that. But one of them recently happened in Israel. And of course, as a result, things tend to happen, things to get very tense, especially in countries where religion tends to sort of kind of drive what the policy is when it comes to law. So I was reading an article by Alex Bollinger and from LGBTQNation.com, and the title basically states LGBTQ people went on strike in Israel and pretty much shut the country down. Why, you ask? Well, tens of thousands of people went on strike throughout Israel yesterday to protest surrogacy rights for gay couples. The main protest was in Tel Aviv, where marchers blocked the Avalon freeway for a short period, and tens of thousands of protesters throughout the city. Shouting Netanyahu is a homophobic, so we have taken to the streets. The protests culminated in Tel Aviv, Tel Aviv's Rabin Square. An estimated range between 60,000 to 100,000 people gathered in the square. Now, the issue is in Jerusalem, protesters gathered near Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's residence, waving flags. Three people were arrested in Jerusalem's protests. Sunday is a work day in Israel, and dozens of companies gave their workers a day off to protest, and several corporations, including Facebook, IBM, issued statements supporting the protest. At issue is the new law about surrogacy. Last week, the cassette? Israel's legislature voted in favor of the bill that would open surrogacy up to single women and married women who could not have children. Single men, though, were not included in the bill and would still be banned from hiring a surrogate mother. Since marriage equality is not legal in Israel, this is effectively a ban on gay couples becoming parents through surrogacy. So what do you guys think about that? Crickets.
A little bit. I mean, it's the interesting thing is it's because Netanyahu had said that he would support an amendment that would expand surrogacy rights for those groups, but he went against it, which is why people were outside, you know, screaming, "You're a liar, you're a coward," some even saying, "You're spineless," because he pretty much went against what he was saying. And it was a controversial legislation that passed on a vote of 59 to 52, so mm-hmm. It was a pretty tight vote, but people are definitely up in arms because, I mean, their prime minister lied to them in the face.
Of course. You know, but
I mean, it's not something we're used to here. We couldn't understand that, right?
You know, if I wanted to be a parent, I could go and ask a friend of mine to carry my child. But unfortunately now, as it stands in Israel, if you're a man, you can't do that, especially if you're gay and single.
And I think it has to be said, though, that Israel is actually a very gay-friendly country. And the gay community there is very visible and very beautiful.
Which is why they, you know, they were able to actually gather and go out in numbers and protest this. Because what if they wanted to be a parent too? This is basically saying you're not allowed to do that here.
Wait, were you just saying that it doesn't support single women?
It only allows single women and women who are married that can't have children to find a surrogate.
Right, no,
but
thought,
men are not allowed.
No, I understand. I thought you said it doesn't support single women for surrogacy. But I thought the opposite. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
So, you know, the issue is the LGBTQ group Aguda called for a national strike, saying the following, quote, "On that day, workers from the community and likewise our supporters and partners will not be present at work and will close their businesses to protest a blatant discrimination against the LGBT community and the deterioration that has begun recently due to the government's efforts to roll back our campaign," the organization said in a statement. They went on to say, quote, "We must all take our emotions, all of our disagreements, all of our criticisms, all the despair, and turn it into a powerful civic force which is no longer willing to hear the word no. And as an answer, it may take 20 years, but even the children of the homophobic parliament members will eventually live in a world in which we are surrounded by LGBTQ people.
Bitch, you're already surrounded by us. Embrace us.
They have no choice. We are here to stay. We're not going anywhere, and we're going to change the reality once and for all. Today, we say yes to a country which we'd like to see in which where we like to live in. So not only do they want to see that change, they want to be able to live within that change. And my whole thing behind this is, as I said before, if I wanted to have a child and I don't want to be married, I should be able to do that. And if I wanted to find a friend or someone who wanted to be my surrogate, I should be able to have that right. And, you know, we're in 2018 at this point, and, you know, there's no reason for men who want to be fathers or who want to have children or have a family be denied the right to do so when they can provide for such person.
Right. And this is a parallel pretty much again across all parliaments and congresses and many parts of the globe. You know, this is a chair of the Agudas who was saying that, you know, even the children of these homophobic parliament members eventually want to live in a world where they, you know, feel embraced to be surrounded by LGBT people. And that's the same thing that we have here. You know, yeah, it's 2018, but we have a large portion of Congress that's well over 50 years old. We have a large part of our two houses that are stuck in their ways and need to retire or just depart in other ways before, you know, more the younger generation moves in and our will gets pushed in. So they understand that it might take some time, but they say eventually, you know, they understand that we have to get these older generations out of the houses.
I mean, it's so crazy that, you know, members of the actual military there were originally told that they would not be able to, they would be punished for taking part in the protests since the demonstration is ostensibly political. It is forbidden for them to take part in demonstrations. But later, a statement from the military said the soldiers would not face punishment for doing so. Microsoft, actually, Microsoft's Israel branch said that it would provide, is it NIS? Is that their currency?
NIS? Yeah, NIS? I don't know.
60,000 an equivalent of $16,500 in U.S. dollars to any employee who would want to become a parent through surrogacy. They released a statement that said the following. The current text of surrogacy law excludes the LGBT community and denies the basic human right to establish a family, the company wrote. Starting today, every one of our workers who decides to set up a family using surrogacy will receive this payment, irrespective of gender, ethnicity, sexual orientation, age, or marital status. Everyone.
Something I found interesting is how you're saying that military personnel were told that they cannot attend these. This demonstration, I found it interesting because the age group for in Israel, it's mandatory for all men and women to serve in the military. And I'm not sure. I believe it's 4 years. I believe.
I think it's less for the women, but more for the men.
But the importance is if you think about 18, say we say 4 years, 18 to 22, that's such a prime age for protesting and standing up. So that's really asking such an important demographic. Telling them that you can't be part of something like this.
And if they're required to participate in or be a part of the military, then you're essentially taking an entire group, like you said.
Yeah, an entire demographic, absolutely.
It's a way of shutting it up.
Mm-hmm.
Shutting
so
it
I
down.
Found that part interesting. But then with the military saying that you're not going to be prosecuted for this if you demonstrate.
So, I mean, I guess what I'm taking from this story is that, you know, bravo to the people of Israel for the LGBT community there for coming up and demonstrating and protesting and fighting for a right that shouldn't even be discussed at this point. You know, anyone that wants to be a father can be a father. Anyone who wants to be a mother should be able to be a mother. And that's just the end of that. You know, it shouldn't be based on who you have sex with or what you do behind four walls. It's no one's business.
It's about putting a child in a loving home.
Exactly. So that being said, I think that wraps up my little version of the story for today, and then I'm going to kick it off to Christopher because she is silent.
No, give it to Trish because we both had it. The Connecticut
Trish,
one.
You want to go?
No, it's yours.
No,
Trish. I'm good.
Well, fine then. She's just going to continue to be nasty. So we all know that lovely restaurant, Chick-fil-A. We've talked about it many a times, indeed. Well, we're going to bring this story to our home of Connecticut. I'm very excited about this.
The great nutmeg state.
That's right. Connecticut McDonald's trolled its infamously anti-LGBT new neighbor Chick-fil-A with a note on the sign out front that reads, "We welcome everyone."
I freaking love this.
I absolutely love that. It's a McDonald's in Glastonbury, and the Chick-fil-A is set to open fairly soon. I believe it's like this Thursday that it's sent to open. And we know that Chick-fil-A was headed by a person who is openly admitted to opposing marriage equality, not only opposing it, but donating to incredibly staunch anti-LGBT causes. And the McDonald's message here is just young, old, whoever you are, you know, you're all welcome here. Though the Chick-fil-A was saying that, I believe it's right here, yes, and this is a quote from the Chick-fil-A, "We are excited to open in Glastonbury next week, and we look forward to being great neighbors who welcome everyone," said the franchise owner, Jordan Snook. He continued to say, "Glastonbury will be representative of all Chick-fil-A restaurants and serving great food and providing remarkable service for all customers, as well as a diverse workplace of individuals who represent many viewpoints, opinions, backgrounds, and beliefs."
Well, one thing is to say something, and the other thing is to live by that creed.
Absolutely.
Right?
And it is a franchise, so the person who owns this franchise might not be a dick, but it's what the Chick-fil-A corporation
very well may be, but we have to keep in mind that, you know, this company's known for saying one thing and doing another. And as I recall and remember, Daniel Villarreal from unicornbooty.com, or at the time it was hornetmedia.com, we had him come on the show and tell us a story about how some of these companies, including Chick-fil-A, were going out there and saying one message. Yeah, we support. Yes, we're not going to do XYZ, but we're still behind the scenes supporting anti-LGBT measures.
Absolutely, which is why it's also very important to point out that Chick-fil-A has consistently maintained a big fat zero on the Human Rights Campaign Corporate Equality Index, which is the CEI, which is that list that I promised, remember, 120 episodes ago that I was going to get out for you guys.
Wait, how many episodes is this? 125?
125.
So 125 weeks ago?
124. We skipped episode 13.
Thank you. All right. So, Christopher, thank you for that wonderful story. We do have a guest that's coming on, so what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break.
And give Trisha coffee.
And get her coffee, get her a shot of something, and then when we come back, we're going to have Cooper Beckett with us from Life on the Swing Set. So here we go. We'll be right back.
My head gets caught in the moment, but my heart doesn't know it. Heart doesn't know it. Somehow I'm lost in the lonely, but it's too hard. Sun on my shoulders, the sun's on my shoulders. My heart's a winding road, but I can't control it, and nobody knows it. Do I fall in love? 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 Do I fall in love?
right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. From the break, that was Dance With Me by the incredible Davis Mallory, a previous guest of ours here on the show. And now, joining us is Cooper Beckett of Life on the Swing Set, a podcast that explores swinging and non-monogamy. He is also a published author, and we're super excited to have him on the show with us today. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to the show, Cooper.
Thank you so much for having me here.
It is amazing. Nick actually took the initiative of booking and having you come on the show, and we wanted to bring you on board to talk about your podcast, what you do, and all the great things that come out of it. So,
well, sounds wonderful.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself before we move forward, and then we'll talk about the podcast in itself.
Well, I've been openly non-monogamous since 2010, very shortly after my now ex-wife and I became non-monogamous. I got it in my head that I could tell other people how to do this very complicated thing with their lives, and started a podcast with my co-host Dylan. And we've been doing that for 8.5 years now. It's kind of crazy when you think about it.
That's a long time. I mean, we've been running now for about what, two and a half years now?
Yeah, and that seems like a long time.
That is a long time. See, the thing is, podcast, you know, as you get longer, it's like old, it's like dog years, really, I think.
So what's kind of cool, a lot of our listeners don't know that Cooper actually works with a lot of podcasts to help grow their listenership and their visibility within the podcasting community and just in general. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you do to help other podcasts grow?
Well, one of the things I try to do is there's this huge overtone of competition in podcasts when really it's not about competition at all, because people are not fighting to podcast against each other, and someone's not going to not listen to this one because they're listening to this one. It's all about figuring out a way to catch listeners' interests. And so what I try to get the podcast, the swinger podcast community specifically, to realize is find what makes you unique and do that regularly. You know, emphasize yourself, emphasize your values and what makes you you.
So you, in doing so, you help create a small community of podcasters that sort of kind of share in the experience and also in listenership.
Yeah. Yeah. And we invite people to share, you know, what techniques have worked for them, you know, what advertising works, because we all know that podcast advertising is a real crapshoot. You know, how to get better reviews, how to get more reviews, all that stuff.
So can you talk to us a little bit about you're also bisexual, correct?
I am, yes.
Okay, great. So how did you come into deciding that I'm going to write these books, I want to share this with people? Like, what was it that like sparked that interest for you? Was it just like you were unhappy, or like how did this all come to be?
You know, before I was non-monogamous, I was blogging and writing and not doing anything with the work, but I was producing content. And then I became non-monogamous and I had to stop blogging because my blog was all about the stuff I was doing, and non-monogamy would not be family friendly on my blog. So I just stopped writing completely. And then Swing Set came along and started to fulfill that need to create. And then years later, when I'd been writing on Swing Set on the website, blogs and articles for about 5 years. And I realized that I'd produced something like 150,000 words of content.
And that's a lot of content.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I couldn't believe it when I saw that number. And I thought, for sure, I have to do something with this that's not just a blog. So I thought, oh, well, won't it be easy to just compile this into a book and release it? Turns out, no, because you have to tell a story in a book. You have to arrange things properly. You have to decide how to edit things. And yeah, that was a big thing. So my first book, My Life on the Swing Set, is my journey through non-monogamy, because I didn't change any of the opinions I had at the beginning, which were very different than the opinions I had at the end of the book. You know, so you get to really see my evolution as I go from pure swinger to somewhat poly, to swinging and poly, as I go through my divorce, as I explore my bisexuality, as I explore pegging and anal play and all the stuff that make me me now, you know?
That's amazing.
Pegging?
Yeah. Yes.
Pegging.
So would you extrapolate?
Should I define?
Yes, please.
Pegging is one of the most weirdly specific sex acts you can do. It is only the following: a female-bodied person wearing a harness with a dildo having sex with a male-bodied person in his ass. That is pegging, period.
So, pegging, period. Done. I learned something today.
So it's so funny that you bring that up, because this weekend I was hanging out with some friends of mine, and
what did I do?
Peg. No. Well, one of my friends is a lesbian, but I looked at her and she was just like describing like her, you know, and she's just a sexual person. She was just describing some experiences, and I literally said to her, I was like, I feel like if you threw on a strap on and fucked me, it would be the best fuck of my life.
Probably would be.
Oh yeah,
man. So I want to know a little bit more about, since obviously this is gay talk, a little bit more about your bisexuality and how through polyamory you came into your bisexuality, what that process was like for you, and how and why it's so important still to not only preach non-monogamy but bisexuality as well.
Well, I think I've had the overt feelings since high school, at least. I always had the curiosity. While all my friends were being vocally anti, no, don't look at the guy's cock in the porn. I was just like, well, but it's not a big deal. Why are you afraid? Why are you afraid?
Mm-hmm. And, it might be a big deal.
Depending. True.
And so as I, the big thing when my ex and I opened up is she discovered that she was bisexual, and she discovered this huge new way to relate to the world and other people. And I thought, oh, I have this thing that I'm curious about. What if I try this and it becomes this huge new thing for me as well? And I was lucky enough to have a very supportive partner, and I started exploring. My first explorations were really bad, mainly because, you know, it felt like no one looked like their pictures, and it all felt kind of dark and weird. And then I had an experience with my partner and another guy, and that was awesome because I felt more comfortable in the situation. And when I started the podcast, I was very quiet about it. You know, I was very pro male bisexuality in swinging, because swinging is very anti male bisexuality. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't upfront that the reason I was pro is because I'm bi.
Right.
And a fellow podcaster sort of bullied me into admitting it on National Coming Out Day. And he was like, you will be the first bi swinging podcaster. And there was something appealing about that.
Yeah, well, sure.
Of course. There's an audience that wants to hear that.
Yeah. So I opened up. I said I was bi. I started talking a lot about it. You know, it's funny because I feel like I'm more the definition of what would be pansexual. You know, I don't particularly care what your genitals are if I like you and want to fuck you. But I think it's far more valuable for me to be openly bisexual male than anything else, because bisexual male is so invisible in the world.
Preach. Mm-hmm. We talk about it all the time. It's one of those weird things, and I don't understand why bisexuality is the most underrepresented part of the community. I don't get it. And I want more and more bisexuals to come out and just be visible for the community. Do you have an idea as to why you think bisexuality is so underrepresented?
Oh, I mean, it's a lot of things, I think, that all come together. You know, the swinging community, I think, looks at bisexuals as disease bringers. And I think a lot of that is leftover homophobia from the 80s and the AIDS crisis.
That makes a lot of sense. If
you have male anal sex, that's the stereotype there that we know was just an exaggeration to spread gay panic. Right. And so that's the swinging community. But really, I think the reason men in the swing community bristle so hard is because they've been taught that all you have to do to get a woman to have sex with you is sort of keep bugging her about it. Hmm. Keep asking, and eventually you get the girl. And so they've been taught that, and now here's a man who's also been taught that, who might want to fuck them, and all he might have to do is keep asking, and suddenly this straight man is going to wind up with a dick in his mouth and a lot of questions for himself the next morning.
Well, that sounds like a lot of no means no means no until yes. Like, that's, I was like, that's...
And it really, really upsets me that it's assumed that the moment we talk about bi guys, me being bi, all the discussion of consent and everything that I would be doing with the female in this situation, it's like I would just completely disregard that and just do whatever the fuck I want because now there's another guy there. So I lose all control. And then it's the status thing that this other guy thinks he's just that awesome.
Right. Mm. You know, it's interesting. Obviously, you know, By the By podcast. We had them.
Love them.
That's kind of how we got connected. And when they were on the show, they were talking about a lot of parties that they attended within their community in Australia, I believe. I'm saying that right?
Yeah.
And it seemed as though it was, at least in their community there, a little bit more represented with men-on-men play. Do you feel like... in America versus Australia, there's a difference there?
Well, I think America is by and large incredibly regressive in general, and we're seeing more of it. At the same time, bi visibility is certainly growing.
Yes.
So I think we're seeing two opposing weather fronts slamming into each other here, the growth of acceptance and the growth of repression. And I'm hoping that acceptance wins out because obviously I have a horse in the race. But I don't think it's not as bad as it used to be, but then I do wonder if I have self-selected my community to not be as bad as it used to be.
Right. That makes complete sense. Can you talk a little bit about your podcast and what is the structure when it comes to when you're talking about non-monogamy versus bisexuality and how do you balance that on the show so that you're giving credit or time to both bisexuality and non-monogamy?
Well, I think one of the ways we're the only generalized non-monogamy podcast. We're the only one that talks extensively about swinging and polyamory. And the way we've sort of gotten to that point is by not worrying about what we're talking about. Like, we're not doing a swinger episode today, so we won't get into anything poly-related, or we're not doing a poly-related episode today, so we won't talk casual sex. And I think a lot of the by growth and acceptance that we've gotten is sort of using it as a Trojan horse. We're throwing the bi male. It's just a thing. It's just a thing on our podcast. It's not a topic. It's not a thing we have to process. It's just a thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've gotten, we were told by a lot of listeners over the years that they were initially feeling uncomfortable with bi guys being around, but our podcast sort of helped them through that.
That's
and I
amazing.
Think if we'd been overt and angry, which sometimes we were, it might not have gotten that,
No, I completely agree. Actually, it's funny that you bring that up. I'm going to share something with you. So this week we received an email from a gentleman named Joe, and I'm going to read it to you because it kind of just like aligns with everything we're talking about right now. So he goes, "Hey, okay. Boys, I just wanted to quickly reach out and say that I'm a bisexual guy. I wouldn't have been able to write that sentence and had I not listened to your show. I know Trisha's ego is big enough, but after listening to all her soapbox speeches about visibility, I had to come out. I wanted to be visible for the ones that can't. Also, you guys just made me feel accepted and comfortable in my skin. Thank you guys so much for making my day every morning."
That's wonderful.
Right?
That's really wonderful.
It's amazing. Yeah. And I love getting feedback like that. And I'm wondering if you feel like, I mean, you were just talking about it a little bit, but do you ever get feedback from individuals that are bi that maybe weren't comfortable or...
Oh, yeah, weren't comfortable, didn't understand that that's what they were. Really, I've gotten a lot of feedback on I hesitated telling the story initially because it felt discriminatory to me. But like when I was in high school, I was really worried I was gay. I didn't have a problem with anyone being gay, but I was worried that I had fundamentally misunderstood my sexuality. And that's scary. You know, and
can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. So like what I was bi. So I was afraid of being something different than I thought I was. I was afraid that if I'm actually gay, then all this time that I thought I was straight, I was wrong. And that scared me. And I didn't have words for bi
right
for a long time. You know, I don't remember when I first understood bi, but it was many years after high school and many years till I understood men being bi, because women being bi just was that thing that turns us on, you know.
Well, it's always been more acceptable too for women to be bi or to be with other women.
Absolutely.
At least in the eyes of men.
I was just about to say at least in the not technically, culturally, but in the eyes of men, yes.
When I feel like that's part of what made it okay for women to come out, it was this weird confluence of the male gaze making something acceptable, making women realize they wanted something, knowing they wouldn't get yelled at more than the standard slut-shaming for it, and being able to go for it. And I always tell the women in... swinging that if they want to see guys fucking, they should make that clear. They should say that loud, because there's always the chance their husband is interested but doesn't want to upset her, you know?
Right. And there's also got to be like a stigma too for some men. It's like, all right, so now if I have sex with another man, how's my wife or partner going to perceive me? Are they going to perceive me as less of a man, or are they going to then identify me as something that I'm not?
Yeah, we wrap so much shit up in this, you know, I feel like there are a lot of men who are curious and who want to try stuff. And then you get this weird, bizarro news articles about, oh, is it okay for straight men to give each other blowjobs?
Yes.
Well, yes, but...
All the time.
Are they still straight men at that point when they're regularly giving each other blowjobs? But what I try to tell people is you should try anything you're curious about. Anything at all. Because if you're a bi-curious guy and you have sex with a man tonight and you don't enjoy yourself, tomorrow you can get up and not be bi-curious anymore if that's what you choose.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Sorry. No, go on.
Actually, it's kind of a weird question.
Yeah.
Just thinking about like men being repressed, but wanting to explore that venue. Do you think that there's still this element of unsafety when somebody doesn't come out and embrace who they are so they can have open conversation because they just need to have these closeted experiences so nobody knows about it?
Yeah, for sure. I think. It's the same thing we see with the sex worker community. The fact that we would be embarrassed or uncomfortable with our desires leads us to make stupid mistakes like going places without vetting them or meeting people without any sort of, you know, I mean, it's, we're not that far removed from that Toronto guy who was killing gay men. Ugh. You know, it's,
that
it's,
was horrible.
I know. And I feel like not everybody can be out, and I get that. And I am out to a degree, but I'm not out fully. But I'm out to whomever I can be out to.
Right.
And I think more, most people can be out to a lot more people than they are out to.
So can
without,
I,
yeah.
I'm sorry, can I ask, to what degree are you out? And like, when you say I can't be out, like, what is that? What does that entail? Is that just like your working environment, or?
Well, I have two lives. I live my Bruce Wayne life, and I live my Batman life. You know, and I'm sort of coming out more and more to Bruce Wayne, which includes my family, which includes, you know, extended stuff like that. And the more I come out over here, the better it feels. And the more I come over, you know, a lot of it is after the election, I started to see who some family members really were. And so I figured I don't give a fuck what they think about me anymore anyway. So, by the way, I'm bi, I'm non-monogamous, and you didn't like me anyway, but now maybe you won't fucking talk to me anymore.
So, bye.
Yeah.
I want to get to your books eventually, but I also want to ask... If you, like, I think we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast, but if you're non-monogamous and you said that you're divorced, I don't know if you're in a relationship since, but how do you go about finding the right person for you so that you can have open conversations? Like, I know that there are different parties and stuff like that, but as a non-monogamous bisexual, how do you meet those people and then have those conversations?
Well, it's a lot of, I mean, I meet a lot of people online because most people meet people online. My current partner, my fiance, I met her on online. She was actually a fan of the podcast before I met her. Ooh. And what I really do now is I front load all the things I'm concerned about. You know, here it is. I'm bi, I'm non-monogamous. I do this, I do this, I do this. And I hit that before I even meet someone, because I don't want to, I'm very shy in general, and I don't like sitting across from someone feeling like they're not digging what I'm saying.
Right.
And so I try to let people self-select out of interactions with me rather than go and meet me first and then hit them with, oh, and by the way.
So it's super interesting. It's weird that this non-monogamy theme has kind of come up on our show recently, because one of my good friends is bisexual, and I would say that that's something he wants in his life. I think he wants to be non-monogamous because he definitely likes to explore both things.
Sure.
But a couple weeks ago, he had reached out to me. Not that we've slept together for 16 years, but we have.
Oh my gosh, she's nasty.
But he reached out to me to let me know that he had met somebody that he was so open with. And she is so excited about the opportunity to date him and potentially like involve herself in these experiences with him. And I was like,
oh,
well,
that's awesome.
Unless it's me, because there will be no involvement there. But
yeah, I think that was his way of saying that you're out.
So Trish, we learned the new term today. It's called pegging. Embrace it.
All right. Maybe I'll get pegged one day. Who knows? So all that being said, I want to move a little bit into your books. I want to talk about the arc of the books that you created. So you said, My Life on the Swing Set was your first book, or was it,
Life? That was the first one. Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about, the arc of them and what those stories that you were putting out meant and why you wrote them when you wrote them?
Are you talking about the other two books?
Yeah. My Life on the Swing Set and A Life Less Monogamous.
Okay. Well, before the podcast, I'd written a screenplay called Vanilla about swingers.
Okay.
And I in looking for something else to do, I'd started multiple nonfiction books, you know, after my life on the swing set, all the sort of, hey, you want to be a swinger kind of books. And I didn't really feel like I was hitting that. And so I found this old screenplay of mine, and I thought, well, this might make an interesting novel. And I played with, you know, NaNoWriMo, which is the National Novel Writers Month. It's basically a bet that you will write a novel in 30 days.
Hmm.
And so I took this screenplay, which is cheating in National Writers Month, and I wrote a novel in just under 30 days. And I really loved what it was saying. And I think it captured a lot of the ways I feel about non-monogamy a lot better than my nonfiction stuff ever did.
And this book was My Life on the Swing Set?
No, this is A Life Less Monogamous.
Okay.
Yeah. And it allowed me to explore conceptually these little Trojan horses, like I mentioned, is I throw a little BDSM and I throw a little bi stuff and I throw a little pegging in here. And so people see this and then you can ask the question, okay, well, if you like that, does that make you gay? And then the characters can address that. And that's great because it's not just me lecturing at the reader that they should be more open-minded.
Right. So it's not just a story. It's also like almost like an educational novel.
Yeah. But that doesn't sound sexy. So it's also sexy. You may learn something, you know, and would that be so terrible?
No. So you brought up that it's sexy. And so I started reading it. Haven't finished it yet. But let me tell you, it is very sexy, like, yeah, to the extent where you, in some, sometimes you may want to read it in the privacy of your own home.
Well, just wait till you get to the second novel.
Oh God.
I mean, like, I was told that there wasn't enough sex in the first book. And so I really went out of my way to include a lot of sex in the second book. And the second one is called Approaching the Swingularity.
Right.
And that takes place at a resort in Mexico, which is very similar but legally distinct from Desire Resorts, where I hold a yearly trip for swingers. And I also cockblock the people just looking for jack-off material in the erotica because I fill the sex with neuroses. Because I'm a person who can't get out of my head during sex, so I'm always thinking about everything else, and I make my characters just like that. So they're having the best sex of their lives, but they're also thinking about that thing that happened earlier today and how it affects, you know, it's the weirdest multitasking erotica ever.
But it's also cool, too, because it sounds to me as though, I don't want this to come off wrong, but it's almost like you're humanizing or normalizing something that's so has such a stigma surrounding it.
And that's what I really wanted to do with these books in general is, you know, people who read, you know, if a couple picks up A Life Less Monogamous and reads it, they can't not have the conversation.
Right.
And really what I think so many people need is just the knowledge that there is an alternative to monogamy, because so many people have no idea that there's an alternative. Right. And so rather than choosing, they're just being shuttled in to monogamy.
Right.
And with what Nick was saying, I almost feel like non-monogamy, there's, yes, of course, there's a stigma, but sometimes it's also an enigma, because not only is there a stereotype toward it, but people just don't understand what it is, which is why I find these books are interesting.
Also, too, you know, it's interesting to think about non-monogamy in relationships, right? So, like, we have people that are married and they have terrible relationships. They end in divorce. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the non-monogamous community, and from my understanding, most of those relationships are way healthier than a monogamous couple. And I was hoping you would elaborate a little bit on that, if you feel the same way.
Yeah. No, I... I always skirt along the line when it sounds like I'm saying non-monogamy is better than monogamy. But what I will say is non-monogamy forces you to be a better communicator. Mm-hmm. And being a better communicator helps you in every single aspect of your life. And the reason non-monogamy does that is because you simply can't live one of those closed-off monogamous lives where you don't have external things coming up, because you're going out and fucking other people. And that, you know, and you're saying to your partner, yes, it's okay, you go out, you have your date tonight and come home after, but just shower before you get into bed with me. So it's like you're setting yourself up in this incredibly complex lifestyle that is so rewarding because of its complexity, but it's like a 10 on the communication scale, and that's what makes it better.
That's so crazy and interesting to me. Like, obviously it's clearly about communication, but also tell me, is it true that if you are in a non-monogamous relationship, and say you go out and you're on a date with somebody else and then you come home to your partner, a lot of times you're still ramped up and then you have amazing sex with your partner following that experience?
Oh, yeah. We also sometimes call that new swinger energy, because it happens after you meet a new couple very often in the swinging lifestyle, where just being around new sexy people really jump starts your sexy relationships.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I've had so many people say the same thing, so it's a phenomenon.
So, I mean, that's crazy. I think I need to open up relationships. Like, maybe I need this in my life.
Maybe you do.
I mean, like, I need some more sex in my life, so. Yeah,
well.
And the best part is, if you try it and don't like it, you don't have to do it again.
Mm-hmm. It's like walking into a store. You see it, you don't like it, you don't have to buy it.
All right, so I'll write a book about my experience getting pegged.
Perfect. I love it.
We'll call it Pegging with Trish.
So I wanted to also give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about your show. For example, when it comes on, how often do you publish, and what our listeners, if they wanted to, could expect from listening to your show?
Sure. Well, we produce roughly 45 episodes a year, but so it's staggered a little. We try for Monday, for Wednesday releases, but you probably get about an episode a week. We long since grew out of only being a non-monogamy podcast, and we basically approach a lot of sexuality topics through the non-monogamy lens, because it is a very specific lens. We have a topic that we go into on a week-by-week basis, so you know, it'll be about, we're about to record one that's about how to give amazing blowjobs. And what's cool about that episode is we're going to have males, females, a trans friend. And so we're going to just approach it from all these different perspectives, because it is different from different perspectives. And it's a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed doing Life on the Swing Set.
I hate to go back. I want to go back to something really quick.
Of course you do.
My brain is just constantly going. You were talking about this resort in Mexico, right?
Yes.
Okay. Am I wrong in saying that was this year the first year they're allowing gay couples?
It's not this year. It's our trip is the first week they are allowing male gay couples.
And that was a big thing that we were talking about with the Bi podcast.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how that came to be and why that's so important?
It really, I think that everything changed for me in non-monogamy when I stopped going to swinger parties and started going to queer parties or queer sex parties. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't just about swinging couples together. It was about all different people of different sexualities, of different bodies, who want to have sexy time together.
Right.
And I realized that the thing the LGBT community needs more than anything else is more integration with the other letters in that spectrum, you know? And so when we started going to Desire, you know, very early, we got, you know, I got called a fag for getting a blowjob on the side of the hot tub our first year. And that year was the year I realized we need to expand and take over this resort, because then no one will be there that doesn't understand that this sort of thing is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And as we took over the resort more and more, we made very clear to the different communities, to the BDSM community, to nudists, to poly people, to swingers, that we want everybody. We want anyone who's interested in being in a sexy place with other sexy people. And we fought for the last 3 years to have that include gay men, but the resort kept throwing at us this, oh, well, what if two men get a room together and then they're straight, and then we have the straight man swinger problem.
Right.
Like, well, I don't think they're going to do that, but okay. We you know, so we fought about it. And this year was the first one they said, it's your week. We take over the resort. Do invite who you want.
Right, and we've talked about the fact that, and it makes sense too. Chris talked about it too, that a single heterosexual male and or maybe a single homosexual male coming to these parties or these events could be more threatening than say a homosexual couple, because just because it's like one guy, right? I mean,
single men have. Unfortunately, good single men have to overcome the stigma of all the really shitty single men who stand around in the corner, who get way too close, who don't ask for permission, who just, you know, they'll come in while couples are having sex in a party and just start jacking off. They didn't ask to be part of this scene. Right. Now they're part of this scene.
Right.
And that's bullshit. And unfortunately, the good single men have to deal with that being what most people's experience with single men and swinging is.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's so complex.
Well, I mean, nothing is ever easy, but you know what? That difficulty sometimes it just makes it that much more enticing.
Yes.
You know, it's like no one would really want to just eat a piece of chicken if it was easy to do it. I mean, you have to.
But if you were pegging and eating chicken,
that would be amazing. Exactly. You know, throw some seasoning on there, start pegging, and go to town.
Just be careful where the seasoning goes.
Absolutely. That's true.
Don't want to put adobo in the booty.
No.
I can't.
Where are the places where your podcast is available?
You can get our podcast at lifeontheswingset.com. We also have a website with blog posts, articles, toy reviews, though we focused a lot more on the audio content as of late. We also have swingset.fm, which is our network where we've invited other non-monogamy podcasters or sexuality podcasters to join our network and just have sort of like podcast collective bargaining.
Oh, and nice.
my stuff can be found at CooperSBeckett.com. You can buy all three of my books as ebooks, paperbacks, or audiobooks at CooperSBeckett.com/store, as well as all sorts of other places. But as an independent author, you should know I benefit more when you buy it from me. And
absolutely. So buy it directly from him.
Yes, you can get it for Kindle or for Apple. You can get all that from me. And you can find me on social media as Cooper S. Beckett if you are interested in following an angry political guy. That's me.
Well, they follow this show.
That makes two of us.
Yeah. I mean, we're sort of rebooting the podcast at the moment. Okay. We got into a habit of being a lot angrier than I want it to be. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that I've really focused on in every aspect of my life over the last few months is I want to spread joy and love and acceptance and positivity. And I think non-monogamy is this glorious thing that can be so much fun. And that's why we do it. And that's why we call sex playing and swinging. Mm-hmm. Because we're playing, and that's fun. And we need that in a really dark world. We need these little blips of light.
Right.
So that's really what I'm trying to get us to. That's the course I'm putting us on.
I think it's also important to note, too, that these books, whether you're into monogamy or non-monogamy, or if you're bi or you're not bi, they're great. They're great reads. Well, at least the one that I'm halfway through, it's a great read. It's fun.
Well, thank you.
I think that they're not just for people are exploring this venue in life.
Well, and it is also, you read it and get that little titillation if you're a monogamous person, boy, this is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Or you read it and you want to tell your partner that you're kind of curious, so you slide it over to her or his side of the bed and say, hey, I just read this. It's really good. And then they read it and you say, what do you think?
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
And also break down the walls of the stigma too, right? So,
yeah.
So like people that don't want that in their life or know that that's not their path, at least you're learning something so that you can be educated about a topic that you once weren't.
You're so much better off choosing monogamy than not choosing non-monogamy. We are monogamous. That's what we want to be,
mm-hmm, right.
Not just because society put us there. I think that's incredibly valuable.
Well, of course.
And it strengthens your relationship because you're actually making the decision.
Right.
That, you know.
We have a choice to do with our lives what we want. And as long as we're honest about it, I think that that's the best route to be able to, foster a really good, healthy relationship with anyone.
Absolutely.
Preach, bitch.
I try. Well, listen, Cooper, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to sit with us crazy boys here on the show, as crazy as we get. But, sometimes we need to have someone else's perspective, and we try to allow our show to actually focus and be a platform for other people to be able to get, the message out as well. And I think that what you're doing and what your group of people and friends are doing is an amazing thing promoting honesty and inclusion. And I want to thank you for joining us on today's episode.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
It is our pleasure. And as I always say to everyone, you have an open invitation to come see us or visit us or joining us on another episode anytime.
Well, that would be lovely.
Well, that being said, again, thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. That is Cooper, who joined us, and we'll have all the information on his podcast noted on our post for today's episode, where you can click on the links and go directly to all the amazing work that they're doing for us.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right.
That was a lot of fun. I would love to come back anytime you want to talk more.
Yeah, for sure, and I would love to meet you in person at some point.
Definitely. Let's make that happen.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you so much.
Have a good night, everybody.
Take care.
Bye.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Cooper. Again, as I said before, we are going to have all the information for Life on the Swing Center on the post page. And now we have a couple of more things that we're going to cover before we wrap up the show because, as you know, it is Monday and we tend to sort of kind of ramble on and blah, 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 and by the time you know it, we've got an hour and 40 minutes.
And what do we do?
Blah, 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 blah. Yep. Lock, stock, and barrel. All right. So, Christopher, I'm going to let you start it off first because your story is a little heavy and
which one?
Mean, right? The story that you have here next. Or are you going to go with your very last one?
Wait, are we talking about the bitch with the red lips?
Yeah.
Oh, her.
I will cut her.
Yeah.
Fuck her.
So we're going to cut her. All right. So I'll let you kick off with that because then I'll talk about something that I think is actually amazing that just recently happened. But go ahead.
All right. Well, the only reason I really wanted to bring this one up is because I work with someone at the restaurant he's a finance major. So, of course, he's, very fiscally conservative. So he's going to watch Fox News. And the reason I mentioned that is we had CNN on Friday, and when this individual came in, he's like, oh, you watched this fake news? And I was like, ew, I know you're a Fox person. So that's the reason that I'm bringing this up. And it was, this is from, of course, Trudy Ring from theadvocate.com, and it states that a right-wing pundit and frequent Fox News guest Star Parker says the B in LGBTQ stands for bestiality.
Mm-hmm. Nasty. I can't say what I said earlier.
Nasty.
No, you cannot. And I think it's important. Nasty. Yeah, that this comes up, especially after the conversation we just had. But then also went further. This is what really got me. Went further to recently liken pride parades to the Nazi atrocity known as Kristallnacht. When the brown shirts rampaged through, I believe it was in Berlin, and destroyed...
Do you love how he all of a sudden changes his accent when he talks about Berlin or anything European?
Yeah, they're not words.
He's like, Berlin.
Anyway, to destroy Jewish-owned businesses. And I'm just, I know I hate to read like quotes on here, but I'm just going to go ahead and read this one quote that she said. And I'm point out the grammar just to, you know, show how perfect this lady is. So this was a quote. They keep pushing out this idea, LGBTQ, she told Newcomb, which was a conservative radio host, Jerry Newcomb's Vocal Point show on Monday. She continued to say, we did the L and the G, and they legalized marriage for themselves. We doing the T now. Yes, again, we doing the T now.
The They're trans. Redoing?
We doing the T now.
Oh, this is how they wrote it.
No, this is how she speaks. We doing the T now. Okay, anyway. The trans, and this is big, big challenge in our society right now. They did the Q, where they're challenging all the textbooks, even as low as kindergarten, to reflect that you don't know what you are, you're questioning. But notice they skipped over the B. And there are some that say this B is going to bombard us with real vileness in our society if they get what they want, because it's not about bisexuality, it's about bestiality.
She is nasty. First of all, she's a C-U-N-T. Anyway.
Absolutely. But this is not the first time. Even a former U.S. senator who was a presidential hopeful at one point, Rick Santorum, did the same exact thing. He was saying that years back when he said this, but by recognizing same-sex marriage or to recognize the right to do what one pleases in private could lead to legal recognition of, quote, man-on-dog sex.
Well, you know what also Santorum stands for? It's the frothy mixture of lube and fecal matter that is sometimes the byproduct of anal sex.
Are you kidding me?
You didn't know about that?
No.
No. This was around that time that you're talking about. Dan Savage literally defined Santorum on a show as the frothy mixture of lube and fecal matter that is sometimes the byproduct of anal sex, and it took off.
That is like the best thing I've heard mm-hmm. in 22 of the 26 years I've been on this mm-hmm. earth.
And I think the biggest thing here, right, it's not about the fact that...
She couldn't comprehend for the first three.
What?
I was respectful.
Anyway, I think the biggest thing here, it's not about what this dumb bitch said about bestiality. She's clearly uneducated. I think the biggest thing here is that it is a problem. The B is skipped over. We need to educate people on what the B is and why it's important to support the B. And it's also not the D, the B. We want it's the D too, but it's the B.
The B.
But it's not bestiality. It's bisexuality. So, bitch, shut the fuck up unless you know what you're talking about.
Preach. Preach.
Right. It's ridiculous. I'm sick and tired of people fucking making shit up.
It's horrible. It's what it is.
And people are always like, why are they adding more letters? They're constantly adding more letters. They're constantly bringing people into this community. And the only reason we're doing that is because there are so many people that are part of this community that are underrepresented and attacked constantly. And until they're completely represented and in our umbrella, we will keep fucking adding letters. And if you don't know what they are, ask somebody or do some goddamn research. You have a smartphone. It's called Google. Like, seriously.
We all have the ability to Google something. That's all I gotta say.
I know.
So, speaking of all the acronyms.
Wait, can we get a fuck her real quick?
Fuck her! I missed that.
I was going to count. 1, 2, 3.
Fuck her!
All right.
Yay!
We got it in there. And Trish is a little bit more enthusiastic during the second half. Proud of you, girl. Mm-hmm. All right, so listen, being that we were talking
about... Wait, can I just say one more thing?
Yes, pegging.
No, I want... pegging. Maybe we're going to add a P to the LGBTQP for Trish, because maybe she needs to get pegged. But what I'm... In here, they're talking about kids as low as kindergarten. We should be teaching kids as young as kindergarten about our history and about what LGBTQ+ stands for, because that is the most impressionable age. Not that we want to change their ideas, but we want to make them accepting.
Right. That's the most important part there. Of course, mm-hmm. we want to teach LGBTQ history, but more than just teaching that at the kindergarten age, you should be teaching
that you can be who you are. Whatever you feel, embrace that, express that.
And
this is the perfect time where you're molding who you're going to be.
Right. They're not teaching sex. They are teaching history. And just like you said, freedom to be who you are.
Right.
And if we were to teach kids at that young of an age, I swear to God, I have 100% faith that the suicide rate would plummet.
Absolutely. I agree. Hmm. I agree.
I'm just, you know what? I need to move on because this woman's going to give me...
I didn't say what I wanted to say.
Anyway, so being that we're speaking of all those acronyms and, of course, T for transgender, we have a very, very good story coming out of Spain regarding the first woman at this point, right? Because does she have to have the word trans in front of it? No, not really. But she is the first trans woman to actually be competing in Miss Universe. Now, it's worth noting that there was another one who tried and wasn't successful. And as a result, she started, you know, the process of suing and saying, you know, you can't really neglect the fact that I am who I am now, and that's just the truth of the matter. But anyway, so the first transgender woman will make history when she competes for the Miss Universe pageant later this year. Spain's Miss Universe, who was recently crowned as 26-year-old Angela or Angela Ponce, beat out nearly two dozen other contestants when she won the title last month. She will be the first transgender woman to compete in a worldwide competition, which is being hosted in the Philippines in December. The transgender woman was a transgender woman was banned from competing in 2013 when then Canada's Jenna Talakova challenged the ruling, bringing the name and color of Spain before. Now, this is, of course, the Spain's elected model to go to Miss Universe. She said the following, quote, "Bringing the name of and color of Spain before the universe is my great dream." She wrote on Instagram, "My goal is to be a spokesperson for a message of inclusion, respect, and diversity, not only for the LGBTQ plus community, but also for the entire world." Ponce, who lives in Sevilla, Spain, tried to compete on the Miss World stage in 2015. She was also the first transgender woman to be crowned Miss Universe in Spain, period. And I think that this is an amazing accomplishment. And not only is it brings visibility for trans women all over the world, but it also puts a spotlight on it in one of the biggest stages that women have when it comes to beauty pageants, and that is the Miss Universe pageant that happens every year.
I mean, I think you can kind of equate this to the conversation that we've been having about transgender people mm-hmm. and competing with their aligned sex when it comes to sports, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to break through what is their glass ceiling, and this woman did. And on top of all of that, she's gorgeous.
Absolutely stunning.
Drop-dead gorgeous.
Have you seen her, Chris? I'll show you a picture.
I want to know what her talent is. I hope beautiful. It's not like lip syncing, though.
Well, that's so presumptuous of you.
I was kind of cunty.
Yeah, I know. Yes, it was. No, but she truly is very beautiful, and we wish her the best. We wish her good luck. You know, hey, listen, you won the crown of Spain as far as Miss Universe goes.
Crazy is we were talking about how, like, Spain and surrounding countries, it's not the easiest place to be transgender.
It's not. But, you know, this is just one of those things where, you know, you really start to see that more and more so in very populous, very urban European countries, things are starting to turn around, not at a pace in which we would want them to, but nonetheless is progress, and any progress at this point is welcomed, especially for our brothers and sisters in our trans community, given what we've put them through. Not we as these three people sitting here in the studio, but we as a nation, at the direction of our horrible hashtag not my president, have put the transgender community through regarding military and service.
Wait, is Spain known to be anti-LGBT?
I don't necessarily think Spain is.
I don't think, yeah.
Well, not that's necessarily what you said.
Trans. But when you said Spain and surrounding countries, I don't remember Spain being any nation that we had mentioned, one of the nations that we had mentioned on the show. Are you thinking more of like Brazil and
South America, not necessarily anti-LGBT.
You know what, Chris, I am.
Yeah.
And that is very ignorant of me. And thank you for calling me out and making me look like an asshole. Anyway, moving on. What's really exciting about transgender people, because Chris is a fucking dick, is that my theater actually just today hired the first ever transgender director at our theater. So I'm super excited.
You got the job, Trish.
I got the job. No, I'm super excited. It's crazy. Like, I'm so excited to have a transgender director at our theater. It's like, what? I would.
And I'm warning you now, Trish has a crush on you.
Beautiful. He's beautiful.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
I didn't know he was transgender. I was like just looking him up because, you know, I have to deal with the directors and all that stuff. And I was looking it up. I'm like, oh my God. Holy crap. And then I came across an article about his transition. I was like, oh my God, I had no idea. And then I just felt so empowered and so like, holy crap, like embraced, but not that my theater isn't embracing me, but the embracing the community.
And they hired you. Your theater is acceptance in a box, in a bottle. Like four times fold.
But it's super exciting that we have a transgender director coming to New Haven to direct a show in New Haven on a regional theater stage. It's huge.
That's awesome.
Great news.
Great news. All right. So listen, we do have to wrap up. We've been gone a little long tonight. Yes, we have. So we've got two things that we need to cover. That would be the Gay Talk term and, of course, On This Day in Gay History. So why don't we shoot it over to Trish?
Wait a minute. Why don't we squirt it over to Trish?
Squirt it over. That's right.
All right. This week's Gay Talk term is
Please don't let it be squirt.
Go. This week's Gay Talk term is brought to you by
UnicornBooty.com.
Not really. Handmade. Said of a large penis, which supposedly attained its size by having been continually stroked or used in fucking. Handmade. That's your Gay Talk term, brought to you, of course, by
UnicornBooty.com.
Not really.
All right. And what do we have, Mr. Christopher?
On this day in gay history, brought to you by none other than
UnicornBooty.com.
Me. Go.
Fine. When? Ooh, July 23rd in 1992. We're going to go back to Mexico because we did talk about Mexico earlier. Newspaper denounced police negligence in wave of homophobic murders. I said that very happy.
Yeah.
I mean, well, they were
very enthusiastically.
But the writer was calling out the police department, so that is okay. You know, gotta make them be responsible for what they're doing. So, drama writer and journalist Margot Sue accuses authorities of dismissing homophobic crimes, labeling them as crimes of passion. She also denounces, the tabloid press's defamation of the victims, resulting in families backing off from pursuing justice. She reports 8 murders of homosexuals from June 5th, 1991 to July 17th, 1992, most of them in Chiapas. One of them, the murder of a clinician who worked for the gay population, took place in Mexico City. So that was so your tragic story on Today in Gay History.
On July 23rd.
You nailed it.
All right. Well, listen, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in. As always, if you love the show, just make sure you go and rate and review our show on your favorite podcasting service. This will help others know about the show and also ensure it becomes more visible within the podcasting community. Blip, blip, blip. No more drinks for me.
It kind of just sounded like one of your balls dropped anyway.
All right. So anyway, by subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as we publish the episode. You can also support us on Patreon, which is a service where you, our listeners, could support the show with a pledge donation. Those donations are collected monthly and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. Chris?
And next week, we welcome Candace from the Breezy Moms podcast.
Yes!
Very excited to meet Candace. She's going to be a guest co-host with us while we chat with Dragon Dads. Dragon Dads is a group whose mission is to fight
to prevent teen suicide and to provide support and education to other fathers who want to show their love and support for their LGBTQIA plus children.
Add those letters. Thank you, thank you, thank you to our guest, Cooper Beckett of Life on the Swing Set, author of Life Less Monogamous and Approaching Swinglarity, novels about swinging and polyamory, and My Life on the Swing Set, Adventures in Swinging and Polyamory, a memoir. Find all this on Cooper's website, which is www.coopersbeckett.com.
Yas, Christopher.
Can I just say that that was written much better for Nick than when I had to read it 2 weeks ago.
I literally copied and pasted it, so it was the same.
Okay, well... Well, there's a lot more highlighted stuff, and it's larger font, and it's actually legible this
time.
It's
all links.
Can we put a rubber on this episode, please?
Two or three, please.
Alrighty. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces, you can find us on social media, but before that, I also want to remind you that you can vote for your favorite podcast at podcastawards.com. Click the listener's nomination and vote for your favorite podcast and ours. Hello. Anyway, you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gmail.com, soon to change to something else. Tom, take it away.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you can reach out to us if you need to. Just go over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab at the top of your web browser, where you can leave comments, suggest topics, submit a question for the cast or an individual host. You can also call us and leave us a question via voice message. We can answer that question for you on the show. Just call 334-GAY-TALK, or if you need all those numbers, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we stream live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gentlemen, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a good night. Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.